excruciatingly embarrassing it is to be backstage and hear people say all those nice things. Mind you, there'll be a correcting tomorrow when I open most of the Tory papers. No doubt. I mean, you will have seen in the Standard tonight that a group of Tory MPs have compared Boris Johnson's record with mine and decided I abysmally failed and he has been a stunning success. And they've challenged me to do an analysis of what I achieved. Well, I don't think we need to waste a lot of time and research on that, because there's some very simple data you can get off the TfL and the Metropolis websites. If you look at the year 2000, when I was elected mayor, we had 25,500 police. When I left, we got it up to 32, a constant raising gradient of police numbers, heading up to 33,000. We'd also got 4,000 PCSOs. We'd introduced a neighbourhood patrol in every one of London's 630 wards. And contrary to all those academics in the Home Office who say there's no link between police numbers and crime, crime was falling solidly. In my last year, it fell by 6%. In Morris's 4 years, it's fallen by another 4.5%. And in this last year, has turned decisively round with murder up 8%, rape up 8.8%, muggings up 11%, and burglary up 5%. And why? Well, it doesn't help if you get through 3 commissioners of police in 4 years. That may have a demoralising effect on the bureaucracy. But even worse, it's the demoralising effect as the police that patrol in our streets see 1,700 of their number cut out. See all the sergeants in those neighbourhood teams forced to apply for their jobs. And that's why I have no doubt whatsoever that we can achieve the pledge I committed us to of restoring the 1,700 police jobs that Boris Johnson has cut and putting them on the streets of London and doing that neighbourhood to be stronger. Then there's the buses. In 2000, we had 5,500 platform buses. I mean, they really were shabby. And by the time I left, we had 8,000 all new in that period. And we're on our way to having 9,000 by now. I mean, they've still just got 8,000. Boris Johnson stopped the bus expansion program. That's why it seems a bit crowded when you get on the buses now. There are bigger gaps between them. And, of course, he has this great achievement, and no one can take this from Boris Johnson. He has bought, I think, 5 or 6 new buses. And wait for the good bit. At £1.5 million each, these are the most expensive buses in human history. And when we went on May the 3rd, I think the people, we're not going to get rid of these buses just because they're Boris's. That would be silly. But people should know they are travelling on the most expensive bus in human history. So we might put that up on the side. So then. There are other small things. We introduced a congestion charge and to everyone's amazement it worked. And we went from traffic speeds of 9 miles an hour, almost at the point of a daily gridlock, to 12.5 miles, and it started to flow. And if it wasn't for Johnson's inability to get a grip of the ridiculous number of roadworks, we wouldn't have the nightmarish congestion we're seeing, which is a real impact on London's economy. We also set in place the biggest investment programme in transport since the end of the Second World War. Not just the things that have been done, like extending the VLR to City Airport and across under the river to Woolwich, or putting an extra carriage on all the DLR trains, and extending, and it will open shortly, the DLR up to Stratford International. But we also took over the most awful railway in Britain, the North London Line. And I remember, you get on that, and there'll be about 4 trains an hour if you're lucky. And twice I got on it, and the seat I was sitting on fell off. We took that over, we brought it back in-house, we created a railway in the overground that has just been voted the best railway in Britain. And as
ground because it's what all our trains should be like. And I was negotiating with Bruce Kelly before I lost the last election that the mayor will become the franchising authority for London for all the suburban rail routes, the ones that go over into Essex and Kent. And my intention was to upgrade them all to that quality and that standard and to bring their fares down in line with the fares that we actually have on public transport in terms of bus and the tube. And there was another thing I was particularly proud of. We created the London Living Wage. London citizens pay the minimum wage is great, it's good the Labour government's done it, but it just doesn't work in London because everything's so expensive. And we brought in a group of economists to look at it, they came back there basically. He needs £2 an hour. So at the moment, the national minimum wage is just over six, and the government's just increased it by less than inflation, thus cutting the living standards of the very poorest once again. But the London living wage is just over eight. And one of the things at the top of my shopping list, for when we get a Labour government, will be I want the mayor to have the power to make the London living wage the legal minimum wage across all the world. I expect some of you have already heard too much about the Olympics. But there's another. I mean, we've all, in any part, we all have our disagreements. And apart from the war in Iraq, I think my biggest disagreement with Tony Blair's government was carrying on Thatcher's ban on building council housing. People, safe environments. And we should have carried on building, and we failed to do so. I think everyone got caught up, and so did the Democrat Party under Clinton in America. One day everyone will own their own home. That's nonsense. Okay? Some people won't ever be able to own their own home. And if, as in America, you force their mortgage companies to give people with no visible means of income a mortgage, it does present a pretty grim trouble. We need a proper mix of homes for people, for the people that want to buy and can, the people that need to rent and have a decent home to live in. This was my first and biggest demand for Gordon Brown when he became Prime Minister. And give him his due, he gave the Mayor's Office £5 billion. Starting tragically just 4 weeks before I lost the election. And that was enough to build 50,000 affordable homes in London. And 30,000 of those were going to be homes for rent. It was the start of a major house building programme. Johnson got in, grossly underachieved it. He didn't want to build any homes for rent. And it limped along. It wasn't all done in 3 years. In the last 6 months, Boris Johnson has started 56 affordable homes in a city where 700,000 families are on the waiting list. What we had to start is a proper house building programme again, as we did in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Every year, we built 50,000 homes for rent, and waiting lists were coming down. I was the chair of housing in Camden. When you got to the top of the waiting list in Camden, we gave people the offer of a choice between six newly built homes. Inconceivable when you say that to people now. And what we've got to commit is to getting a proper house building programme again. Every time I meet Ed Pauls and Ed Redman, I say that London just isn't going to work. I mean, London's population went down to 6.75 million at the end of the 80s. Today it's 8 million. And we're on our way to 9 million sometime in the 2020s. And it will be intolerable if we haven't built a proper range of housing. And we need to get a commitment to build 50,000 homes a year for a decade to break the back of that. And that is coming up for you now. No. In the short time of this debate, no government's going to be able to give any mayor of any party borrowing to give them 50 billion. But we've got hundreds of billions of pounds tied up in pension funds. And if you've got a private sector pension fund, and you retire on a day the stock market has crashed,
For the rest of your life, your pension might be half of what you anticipated. How many that an investment that you built up over 30 or 40 years is in the speculative arena of the stock markets of the world? How much better, pardon me, if those building societies, those pension funds, were investing not just in stocks and shares and bonds, but in infrastructure, in building hundreds of thousands of homes, having security this government failed to bring the deficit down because it's cut too fast and too deep. Understand this, in this recession, in this last 4 years, two-thirds of all the jobs that have been lost in London have been in construction. There isn't any way out of this nightmare without we start building again decent homes and much more in the way of expansion of our transport network. But there are other sort of differences as well. I wasn't there, and Brian Paddock says this, and I trust him. He was saying just before the election, they were standing waiting to go on to some TV programme. And Boris said, I'm really worried if I win, I won't be able to afford to live on their salary. And I thought, well, you understand this. Not many Eton boys have to get by on just £140,000 a year. But for the last 4 years, he's been earning £250,000 a year doing a column for the Daily Telegraph one day a week. Now, he tells us he only takes an hour or two to write it on a Sunday morning, which is, 8 days' work a year for £250,000. Can't be bad. But you see, it isn't just the fact he's got his mind on something else. What is the nature of the relationship between the Barclay brothers, who are tax exiles, who never pay a penny of tax to this country, but own the Telegraph, and they're paying Boris Johnson £250,000 for a column? Yeah. Does the Daily Telegraph in John the florid prose of Boris Johnson? Or are they just trying to ensure that someone they think may one day be the leader of the Conservative Party and a future Prime Minister is in their pocket and in debt to them, and they will be able to pull those trains in and ensure their taxpayers? But if that's a rather unpleasant relationship, there may be something even worse in terms of relationships with Murdoch. When The Guardian back in July 2009 really broke the phone hacking story, and Boris was questioned about this by Labour Assembly members, he said it was piffle, Labour, pyramid of piffle, and all this Labour nonsense and so on. But it's interesting. Rupert Murdoch phoned the editors of his British papers before the last mayoral election to ensure that they were endorsing Boris Johnson. He then had, Boris Johnson had more meetings with Rupert Murdoch and James and the leading executives, about as many meetings with them as he had with Secretary of State for Transport, which you would have thought would have been more of a priority. And then as the operation to investigate this got underway, the man he appointed to be the vice chair of the police authority, Kit Morehouse, 3 times told Cressida Dick, the assistant commissioner in charge, that was it right to be wasting all these resources on investigating this? And a lot of us were surprised. When, having forced Ian Blair out, Boris Johnson then wanted to see Paul Stevenson as the new commissioner, rather than Sir Hugh. And the general consensus in the police community, now I'm not talking about a Labour leftist here, a police federation and groups like that, was that basically they didn't want Hugh because Hugh would say, you're wrong about this. And they thought Stevenson would just roll over and do what he was told. And that's why I'm very worried when it came out in the inquiry, that's now going on the Leftist inquiry, that the Commissioner of Police, Paul Stevenson, went to the Guardian and asked them to stop investigating this story. Now, Boris Johnson, supported by Rupert Murdoch, the man he appointed to the police and the commissioner he appointed, trying to prevent this going any further. I think in many ways this is a much more sinister relationship between a press baron and the mayor than the simple squalid buying off of the Barclay brothers in terms of giving them £250,000. I think this absolute promise. We will redouble all the efforts inside the Met to ensure every part of this scandal is brought to light, and those who are guilty of crimes, even if it's Rupert and James Murdoch, are prosecuted to the full extent.